leadership lessons, and lessons for children. I'm Chris Makowski, and today on the Emerging Civil War podcast, we'll talk to Jamie Umstead of the Gettysburg Foundation about some of their innovative programs today on the Emerging Civil War podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Civil War Trails, the world's largest open-air museum, offering over 1,500 sites across six states. Civil War Trails puts you in the footsteps of famous generals, freedom fighters, and tenacious women. Follow the great campaigns turn by turn, take a historic hike, and explore beautiful downtowns. Snap a signed selfie along the way. Request your brochure today at civilwartrails.org. Follow Civil War Trails and create some history of your own.
Welcome to the Emerging Civil War podcast. I'm Chris Makowski, having all sorts of technical difficulties this evening. Thanks for being with us. And joining me from the most famous small town in America is Jamie Umstead from the Gettysburg Foundation. Jamie, how are you?
I am brilliant. Today is gorgeous and I can't be better.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I know that you're brilliant because the work you've been doing for the foundation has been fantastic. So it just goes hand in hand. Thanks for being with us here for Women's History Month. And just in commemoration of the month, I like to talk to women who are working in Civil War public history. To tell you a little bit about my own motivations for that, I have a daughter who's 30, but when she was little, she always loved Civil War, and I just always looked for role models for her to look up to. Right. And so having women who are working in the field, I think, is really important for young people interested in getting into the field, and they can see the great successes. And you've certainly had some fantastic success, including a recent promotion. So congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So Jamie is with the leadership department at the Gettysburg Foundation, and I'll let her tell you a little bit about what that actually means, but it's an opportunity to take advantage of the battlefield. Tell us a little bit about what you do, Jamie.
Well, I was absolutely thrilled when the leadership program specialist in this position popped up, and I went, oh my gosh, I want to do that. What it does is it really actually merges a lot of my interests all in one. I love that. It's basically takes my corporate upbringing of what I've done in my past careers, and I can take the idea of leadership and management and the battlefield and all the maneuvers and the decisions that were made at breakneck pace at some point, and use that, translate it into how to make decisions on the fly, how to become better leaders. You know, you got better citizens, better leaders. I can't think of a better thing to actually help with upper management and corporate America. It's a great place. I mean, it brings people to Gettysburg that may not think to come here. It brings back the original purpose of the park, of using the battlefield as a classroom. And as my lovely man, well, my manager, and he's going to yell at me if I call him boss, but I'm going to call him that anyway, Britt Eisenberg, brilliant, a licensed battlefield guide. Says, you know, we're here to honor the history and the people who made the history and to preserve it for the future. So really, we're passing on that history to people who may or may not understand or would have come here on their own, but will come back now with their families, with their newfound knowledge, and then they can be the Gettysburg buff on the battlefield pointing things out. So that's really one of the beautiful things that the leadership program does.
And to me, it's really cool as a way to show in yet one more way, like, here's how history is still relevant to us today. Here's how you can apply it. It's usable history.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you mentioned that you actually go out onto the field as opposed to necessarily just sitting in a seminar room all day. So that's got to make the program a lot different than other typical leadership programs. Tell me a little bit about what it's like to enroll in the course and go through it.
Well, enrolling is really just having your company contact us and coming on out, getting in touch with Britt or myself or Billy Griffith. And what we do is we'll do classroom learning. We do virtual learning. So we do virtual programs as well. Like, we just finished up one last week. It was 2 days in a row, 4 hours each morning. And it was great. We have a licensed battlefield guide and a facilitator to talk about the history, to talk about, you know, management style. And then with video interpretation for those. However, you get the chance to actually come here, we'll take you out on the battlefield. The Gettysburg Foundation is actually the philanthropic partner of the National Park Service here. So we own the Museum Visitor Center, otherwise known as the MVC to us. so too much jargon. But we
That's
own
okay.
That
we
building.
here in Chancellorsville, yeah. We have CVC, which is the Chancellorsville Visitor Center, and FVC, the Fredericksburg Visitor Center. So I'm with you.
Yeah. So we have wonderful things and assets that we can actually pull out that, you know, a lot of people can't normally see. Like, you can have dinner at the visitor center over in the evening when we're not open. Have the museum to yourself and your company. Go up and see the cyclorama with the lights up. I don't know. I think it's totally worth it just to be able to go in the visitor center after dark when no one else is there and be like, yes, I got my run of the place. But I look for any excuse to go down to the visitor center myself anyway. So,
well, and that's no small feat, because there are usually a lot of people in the visitor center. So to be able to be there in the quiet is a whole different way to experience that museum than typically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. No school groups. None of that stuff there at the same time. It's really relaxing, and you know, it's team building too. I mean, we have a lot of people that we'll take them out on the battlefield, get everybody on a bus. We'll go out somewhere onto the field. We'll discuss what happened there. And then we'll also have our facilitators there asking some tougher questions, like, what would you do in this situation? You know, who is the Dan Sickles in your company? You know, the interesting questions.
And to me, what is fascinating about this is, you know, a lot of people sort of think about leadership as sort of like this trendy little field in management and business. But like, as Civil War enthusiasts, we do this all the time because we're armchair generaling constantly. And so, you know, here, this is like now doing it in a formalized setting in a way that is actually applicable, as opposed to just sort of this hypothetical stuff that we like to do over beer and cigars or whatever. What's it like to invite these people to come onto this battlefield and inhabit the shoes of people that you and I know really well from the historical record?
Yeah, it can be quite emotional for some people, because they might not be, well, a lot of our customers, a lot of our clients that come out here aren't necessarily familiar with the ins and outs. I mean, I still haven't taken it for granted. I'm in my honeymoon phase with Gettysburg since I just moved here about 3 years ago. So,
and I hope you never lose that experience. So.
Well, I spent about 20 years trying to pinpoint and plan, and how the heck am I going to finally move there? And so I figure if I am honeymooning for at least 10 years, and half of that time it took me to get here, I'll be fine with that. But a lot of these clients that come out, along with our students, they've never heard the stories, so they hit them harder. They really actually get emotional. As we're talking to them, we're also asking them questions about what they do in their daily life. What do they do at work? Who do they talk to? How do you communicate with your other staff? How do you communicate with your inside clients, you know, the people you work with? I come from a customer service background, so we were pretty, I mean, I, my past life career was hotel management. I worked for Marriott. And so we were very customer centric, and it was very client facing, very customer facing. So, but I never saw that, you know, I never saw past the fact that the people I work with on a day-to-day basis deserve that same respect that you give the customer. You also need to give that to your coworkers.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where we'll have people out on the field who kind of have these moments of aha moments, and that may be a good aha moment, maybe a not so good aha moment, but either way, they're making progress, and that's great.
Yeah, I actually, in a former life, came from a PR background, and I always found that internal audiences are the most overlooked audiences, and yet they're crucial to your company's success. And so paying attention to that is really important. Mm-hmm. Now, I think about going to like East Cemetery Hill, for instance, and going there and being in the boots of Oliver Otis Howard is a different experience than being in the boots of Winfield Scott Hancock. than being in the boots of George Gordon Meade when he finally shows up. How do you help your clients understand those differences and put them in those boots? And, because they're not coming with the back knowledge that, we as enthusiasts have. How do you help them kind of see those shades of experience?
Well, that's where our licensed battlefield guides come in.
Okay.
So we bring a licensed battlefield guide on with every single program. If it's a client we've already had in the past and they have somebody that they really love the most, we'll bring them back in. We do have a kind of a normal set of folks who constantly are constant that we go back to. But heck, we're always open to bringing in more and
Yeah.
more people. More licensed battlefield guides, the better when it comes to understanding every point of view. I mean, I just saw a fantastic talk the other day with the Gettysburg Civil War Roundtable, all about O.O. Howard and trying to rescue his story and his defending Oliver Otis Howard. Yeah, and
Yeah,
so
boy.
it's great. We need to bring that in from everywhere. So we do bring in our licensed battlefield guides for that backstory to present it, but then we have our facilitators there with the program to bring up the hard questions, to talk about your managing style, to talk about what's going on and ask those questions of, what's your high ground? What would you do? What hill are you going to die on in your company?
Yeah.
Those are the bigger questions that we like to bring up and along the way.
So, and that's fascinating to me because, I using Howard as an example, he's one of those guys that's really easy for people to make fun of. And yet, and I think about the old Ed Barr story where he's having health problems on Cemetery Hill by the Howard statue. And he's like, God, no, not the foot of Oliver Otis Howard, So he's worried that that's where he's going to die. Like, he's one of those guys that, like, he gets such harassment and derision. But, like, from his point of view as a leader,
Yeah.
he's not thinking, like, I'm going to go and botch this and I'm going to do a bad job. Like, he's the hero of his own story, as we all are. And so to kind of
Yeah.
understand with empathy what he might be thinking, there's a lot you can
Absolutely.
learn from a leadership perspective there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's understanding, where people come from. So, I mean, that's another beautiful thing of having that guide there, because then we've had a lot of attendees actually ask questions along the way. And then there's, I have the absolute privilege of working with two licensed battlefield guides, so Britt Eisenberg and Billy Griffith, and along with the staff that we bring in on as well. I'm working on it, although I'm terrified, but I'm hoping to throw in my my hat into the ring this year when they are giving the licensed battlefield exam.
Oh,
So
awesome.
we'll see. So I can answer some questions on the back end right now. But then, if it's something harder, I'll be like, hey.
But you talk about, like, discussion, and you said these are very participatory events, and you get the,
Yeah.
and, like, to me, that's what, like, how the best history happens is you just sit around and you talk about it and you get these different opinions and different perspectives, and that's how you come to the best understanding, I think,
Yeah, absolutely. You have to talk about it, otherwise you're not going anywhere. You're just talking to yourself, and goodness knows that gets nowhere fast.
So you talked a few minutes ago about your journey to get to Gettysburg and to get to the foundation. So let's kind of go back and explore your own Civil War origin story. And how did you get hooked on the war in the first place?
Well, let's see. It probably started before I was born. No. My grandfather was actually a World War II vet. He really did love the Civil War history. He wanted to go back, and he would drag my father out antiquing to go try to find different types of militaria. And along the way, my parents were always, whenever we go on vacation, we'd always go someplace historic. Every single time, there had to be something there that was historic. And I have to give them so much credit because they made it like we were going someplace very special. I mean, and it was almost like treasure hunt special when we go to find, like, go to star forts along the coastline. I grew up in Pennsylvania, so I grew up over by the Delaware River and by the or up at the Delaware Water Gap area, and it's beautiful up there. But we would go up and down the coast and go all over the place. And to get anywhere without going through I-95 corridor, you got to go down towards Harrisburg, Route 15 south, and then you're going past Gettysburg. And we'd stop here as like a little waypoint. And we every time we'd come down here, I swear it was the weirdest feeling. It would just get quiet as you got closer to Gettysburg. And I just kind of always had this bizarre feeling of this place. And even from my youngest age, I was always like, "Ooh, we're down by Gettysburg." So when we finally would stop here and come here, I just was fascinated. So I picked up books, would look at the photos, and obviously I'm a kid, so I'm looking at post-battle photos, and I'm like, "Ooh, that's crazy gnarly." And then you could go there, and it's like a time machine. You're like, "I'm standing next to this rock that this is, whoa." So that kind of otherworldliness of it, just I was taken. Absolutely loved it from a young age. And my mom, I say unfortunately, recently discovered some photos of me from my formative years. And actually at the old visitor center and actually up in the actual National Tower
Oh, wow. Okay.
and the Ziegler Hill Tower. Which I hadn't come here for a couple of years, and I didn't realize they tore that one down too. And then when I first came back, I'm like, "Well, I know they got rid of the other." Okay. So bizarre. Yeah, I went through a lot of things, and these great photos. But like the Wax Museum, like I'm old enough to go to a lot of these things. It was great. Don't necessarily miss a lot of that stuff, but
But like,
the
certainly there's that nostalgia factor and that
there is.
Americana experience of old time
Yeah.
Gettysburg that people don't get today.
Yeah. I mean, I do love the whole Route 66, Route 30 feel of it. That is one of my favorite things because I went to college out in Pittsburgh. I went to college for the theater major, history minor. I was like, "Oh yeah, I can merge these two things together. That'd be great." Well, life happens and stuff and things change. Priorities change a little bit. Ended up actually going, "You know what? I want to run a historic bed and breakfast." Okay, how can I do that with no experience? And I finally found somebody with who was willing to actually hire me as just a front desk person at a old as a, at a bed and breakfast, and went, "Okay, that's not the right way to do this or treat your employees. So I'm gonna go find the corporate way." And then I went through a Hilton to proceed to Marriott, and within 5 years, I was actually general manager of a Marriott hotel long-term stay. And hung out there for quite some time. It was quite comfortable and fascinating because, with a theater background and studying people, holy cow, hotels are the way to go. You're going to learn a lot about people and what they act like, when they think, when they're at home, you get to see people at home when they're in your hotel. But that also gave me the open availability to travel on the cheap. So when you have an associate rate, I mean, I remember coming down here and staying at the Hilton Garden Inn for $17. And it was ridiculous and it was great. There were many times where my lovely husband, who's been so incredibly supportive over the years, would say, "You look like you're getting drawn. You're getting that crazy history itch thing going on," because I'd start opening up books and start reading stuff. And I'm just like, "Oh, I need to go somewhere." And so I would take like a 2 day weekend, and I would just come down here overnight and just scour the battlefield, walk around wherever I wanted to go, not have to worry about like boring family members. And yeah, I could go through the weeds, and it was great. But of all things, actually, COVID made it possible for us to move down here. My oldest daughter is actually 23. My youngest is 10. So she did kind of kindergarten in was in kindergarten during the whole COVID thing. So spent kindergarten and first grade doing virtual teacher. So when we decided we were going to try to move down here, she had one really awesome best friend, and she still talks to her on a routine basis, which is great, but it made it easier for the move. And so we finally, houses down here come up for sale pretty much as rare as dragons. It's hard to find them. But we seem to have gotten lucky, and we're in the borough because I was like, "I want to be able to walk to the battlefield wherever we live." I want to be close. And yeah, it's been, like I said, I'm honeymooning here still, like almost 3 years later.
That's awesome, though. I mean, and talk about like sort of self-actualizing your dream. Like, I'm gonna make this happen. I'm gonna make this happen. Boom, I made it happen. That's awesome.
I'll tell you, as soon as we talked about the idea, even moving anywhere, I started the whole process of going through all of my things and started boxing things up immediately. And then I think my husband was like, oh, okay, this is happening. Because he worked from home. So at that point, it was like, it didn't matter where we lived. He could work from home and he could work from anywhere. But
So then you found a position with the Gettysburg Foundation. You don't have to answer this question. Did you have that before you came, or you just came on faith
No.
and then found some?
I came on faith. I mean, I didn't
Woo.
care if I was mopping the floors of the visitor center. I wanted to work here somewhere. The National Park Service was something that was always on my radar. I mean, as a kid, I mean, I grew up playing out in the woods, and my uncle was actually in the Park Service, and actually in the he was a forest ranger. So I always kind of wanted to, we thought that would be awesome. However, by the time I actually got to the point where I could get that job, I wasn't, that job wasn't there anymore. I mean, the Park Service job is now, it's what I was looking for seemed to be more like policing. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to do that. I want to do interpretation. But Chris Gwynn's doing an amazing job of that, and he's like so good. And no, he's awesome. He needs to stay
He is wonderful.
there.
He is wonderful.
So I ended up kind of the Gettysburg Foundation and the Park Service were truly stretch goals for me. I was like, I don't care what I'm doing, but I want to work there, and those guys would be awesome to work for. So what I ended up doing was the first day, Helena, my youngest, had school here because we moved here in July. I went to working myself by going online and printing out applications, filling out applications, doing stuff. And I went to the foundation website, print out application, walked it in with my cover letter because I figured, any excuse to get into the visitor center. And I'm going to go down there. It's going to be great. And went right up to the Friends of Gettysburg desk that's in the lobby. And I met Ray Matlock. And he is amazing. He is in charge of our volunteers. But after about 30 minutes of talking to him and getting to talk about anything, this, that, and the other thing, he was like, oh, okay. Yeah. You know what? You're going to drop that over there at will call. So really, I think what he was doing was interviewing me the whole time. Man, he can actually, he sells membership, and luckily I already had one. But as he'll sell you one to you, to your pets, to your grandmother, he'll make, and then he'll have you volunteering by that afternoon, and you won't know what hit you. Ray Matlock is an amazing man. So I went over, dropped off my application, and that afternoon I got a phone call.
Well, I mean, truth in advertising, they will call. So, I mean, that's
Yeah, right. And it was great. I am the luckiest person alive, because really, truly, they had just actually put out an application or job listing for the Children of Gettysburg 1863 Museum. They had already hired two people. They decided along the way, it was 2 weeks just before opening in on Labor Day of 2021, and they said, we need one more person. And they put that out that week. And so I got to meet some of the best people ever working there. My manager there was Bethany Yingling. Speaking of women mentors, my gosh, she was, I can't say many more wonderful things about her. She helped me get really involved in knowing the community. She really lifted me up. She truly did. And she's still there, and she's actually back at the Rupp House now and back in the philanthropy department. And but the Children of Gettysburg, the museum there, is exactly what we were talking about before. We're bringing the battlefield here and bringing the civilian experience down to a children's level. I mean, it's designed for kindergarten through fifth grade, but we like to say it's pretty much all ages. I mean, if you're less than, you're younger than three, you're not going to get too much out of it other than playing. But for those other age groups, I mean, it's hands-on. You're allowed to pick things up. play things, try things on. We have hoop dresses and hoop skirts for girls. We have uniforms. We have, oh gosh, we've got a, we have our wounded soldier Bob in the back room where the kids can try to actually doctor him up. And on top of that, we even have a letter writing program, which is I've never seen anywhere else. So we can talk to the kids about, you know, if the kids would help with bandaging, they would help go get water. They would help write letters home for these soldiers and let their families and loved ones know where they are, what they're doing. You know, we thought writing cursive handwriting was going to be the thing that would throw most kids off, but really it's letter writing nowadays. With texting and with, I mean, God forbid, we explained letter writing to a little boy one day, and he said, "Well, you know, you write dear so and so, and then you write a letter to them telling them about what's going on, what you're doing." And he just looked at us and went, "You mean like an email?" Like, wait, email's an old thing now too? Oh my God. I mean, one of my most crushing things of my existence so far was trying to explain to my oldest daughter what a mixtape was. I'm like, oh gosh, things are getting so old so fast. So really, what we do is we have the kids write a letter and explaining how Bob's doing. It could be to anybody in his family. And then with their parents' permission, they put their name and their address on the back of the paper. And by the way, it is on error correct stationery. It's actually on a piece of authentic look stationery. And we send it to his family. Henceforth, they email it to our volunteers, and they write the letters back. And so we have had thousands of letters go back. His family gets a lot of mail. We like to put it that way. And so these letters go back out to the kids, and it could be a week or two later. It could be a couple, like a month later. Depends on how backed up we get. But right now we're good. And these kids get these letters at home, and it's a fantastic touch point after they've left. And then they, and it's always personalized to what they wrote. So, you know, sometimes Bob makes it, sometimes he doesn't. We had at least one case where he got abducted by aliens. You know, we've had all sorts of things happen to our wounded soldier, but they always get a letter back that's based on what they wrote, for better or for worse.
What a wonderful idea, though. I mean, and talk about carrying that interactivity, right literally to these kids' doorsteps. That's
Yeah,
fantastic.
I love it so much.
Now,
Yeah.
as you're telling me about some of the things at the museum, I'm starting to think like I'm seeing theatery sorts of experiences here with props and just storytelling and script writing and stuff like that. So it sounds like your background that you hadn't necessarily thought of in a history context is starting to find ways to apply to your history context.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have no qualms about talking in front of people, obviously. Sometimes too much. But I found, well, I've led tours at the museum, so I really do try to get into talk, like not in a reenactor type of way, not in a living historian type of way. But they have gotten me in a hoop dress once, but that was Bethany. Okay, maybe twice. But anyways, I digress. It's really, it's not like we don't, we do actually have living historians come in and they'll tell us stories. They'll go over and teach about nursing and things along that nature. But for the most part, we really try to get the kids to immerse themselves in that time period because, I mean, they can talk about maneuvers in the battlefield until they're blue in the face. They don't care. But when they can go into that kitchen and they can start playing with, like, you know, an egg mixer, they can see an ice cream scoop from the 1800s. And they get so much interest out of what a toaster looks like. We'll be like, "Can you find the toaster up on the Hoosier cabinet?" And they'll look and look and look and look. And then they'll finally go, "No." "Is it that cheese grater looking thing?" "Yes." So,
I remember
in that regard, yeah.
the first time I had to explain to my 7-year-old what a butter churn was when we were going through a historic house, and they said, "Oh, that's how they make butter," and it like blew his mind. So it's
Yeah. Well, we do have a washboard. And so
Okay.
I always challenge kids. I'm like, all right, go over there and actually go ahead and take wash that shirt over there. We got a couple socks in there too. Because geez, if you've never done it, I would recommend just doing at least one or two shirts with a real washboard just to see what that's like. Because geez, you will never ever take for granted a washing machine ever again.
So, since you,
We like to let the kids know how good they have
that's
it.
right. You're complaining right now. Let me show you something. So, in your time at the museum, how have you seen it change and evolve?
Well, it's an organic thing. It truly is. I mean, as a hands-on museum, and as really one of the few things for kids to do in town. When we opened, there was nothing else for children to do in town anymore. So we've gone the way of what they like, with what we've been watching them. When we first opened, for example, we had a scavenger hunt where once they came in, they would pick a kid to learn about. We'd give them a sticker, and then they could read the storybook as they're going through. But we handed them the scavenger hunt card as well and said, now make sure you go in and you have to see if you could find the item in this picture. And it was, one in each room. So thinking, okay, these kids are going to go in and then they're going to actually read the book. They can go find the thing in the room and then they'll move on to the next room. Nope, that's not what kids do. We just gave them a job to do. So
Okay.
what they're going to do is go boom, 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 find everything, every single stamper, every single embosser, and then they come back to us and go, I'm done. What do I get? And we're like, did you look at any? You just got here. So one of the best things we ever did. Thank you, David Nelson, one of my coworkers that were at that museum. He said, we got to get rid of them. And so we did. We unscrewed them all. We took them all out. And the next day, these kids came in, gave them a sticker. We explained about the children that our museum follows, their story, and they pick one. And then we said, find the books. Find those books in every room. And then find out what they're doing while the battle starts and what has as the battle goes on. And that's what they did. And it was great. They went to the book, they read the story, they were like, okay. And then they explored the room and they go to the next room. And then at the very end, we asked them a question, just a simple question. We pop quiz them and go, so what did you learn here? What's one thing you learned? Or what's one thing you learned about the kid that you were actually reading about? Because they're all real people. And we usually get the deer in headlights look at first. And then they'll rattle something off and it's like, yeah, see, you learned something. And then we give them the card that we made that has the real person's face on it so that they can see not just the cartoon sticker. Now they actually have a real photo of who that person was. And then their backstory on the back of the card, it's what they did with the rest of their life. So they get their whole story as they come through. And the kids at the end really get excited about that card now. And just little things like get rid of the scavenger hunt, it's got to go. And then the kids really actually learned things. They had fun. We saw less grumpy faces when we gave them a bookmark, for completing the scavenger hunt. So it's a learning machine. It's a learning museum. It really is. We're learning as much as they are, really, as we go.
So, is there a favorite story of a particular child that has resonated with you? Of the stories that
Oh
the
God.
museum tells? So I'm
Well,
sure there are
that
a
one's
bunch of
kind of
fascinating ones, but.
Yeah. My favorite bit, and I can't pick out of the six, top six kids because that literally is like picking your favorite child at this point.
Sure.
But my favorite piece of a story is William Bailey's, where he has a Confederate soldier who's a young kid actually come knocking on his door and says, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. I just, he's thrown in the towel. He just can't fight anymore. Can you please just conceal me somehow? So the Bailey family takes him in. They get rid of his uniform. They actually give him civilian clothes and they basically say, now just don't say a word. Kid's from North Carolina. Sure, he's got a pretty hefty accent. So he doesn't. And so they kind of conceal him for a while. And battle runs on its course. It's over because the Bailey family lives 3 miles north of town. So first day battlefield up on just north, and they end up watching the Confederates retreat and leave. And he stays there. Actually, he pretty much gets raised by the Bailey family for the rest of his life. He stays in Adams County. We had one of his descendants come through the museum,
Oh, wow.
and it was the craziest, most 2023 story ever. Well, actually, I think it's 2022, because basically what happened was they didn't realize they had family that extended up to here. This is the North Carolina contingent. They did a 23andMe test and found, why do we still have this? Why are we getting pings in Pennsylvania? We don't have anybody up there. And what they found was their family tree kept growing up here because the kid, whose name is Milas Wilson, never went home again, never contacted his family, never contacted his mother. He was assumed dead. So
Oh, wow.
life went on. He got married to Anna Plank, a local girl. Works out the rest of his life here, has kids. I think one of his kids becomes a licensed battlefield guide like later. And it's pretty awesome. An incredible story. And like this family didn't really know anything about this until DNA testing. So it was fascinating. Just a bit onto it. Because we knew about the Confederate soldier, but we didn't know the rest of the story. And that's amazing. The little things like that that still pop out 160 years later. It's so cool.
Oh wow, that's fascinating. Jeez.
Yeah.
So, first of all, for folks who aren't familiar with the museum, tell us where can people find it and how do they visit and that sort of stuff.
So if you type in Children of Gettysburg, 1863, you're going to find us. But we are at 451 Baltimore Pike in the Rupp House. So the historic Rupp House, where John Rupp famously hides in there, not just hides, takes cover in the basement while the fighting is going on. And his house is right in the middle of it all. So we do have a nice homage to the Rupp family in the middle of the museum because we have the Rupp family Bible.
Oh,
And yeah, so it's what Caroline had a pretty much as we know it stuffed under one arm and her 6-month-old under her other arm as she kind of trundled down Baltimore Street to get to our in-laws' house up where the fire department is now.
and it's still such a great walkable part of town too. So, I mean, it's a nice, easy, convenient spot to get.
Oh yeah, and and since I'll give your listeners a little heads up. If you're going to the museum, you can park behind it where it says the Gettysburg Foundation. Because parking on that end of town can get a little hairy,
that's no
and
small thing right there.
it's not.
So what was it that made the foundation decide to get into this sort of museum? I know that the foundation does so much good work in so many different ways, and this was kind of like a
Yeah.
new add-on for them when they started this museum.
Well, it started out with the philanthropy department, and they really said, they took a look around and they looked and said, all we see are kids climbing on cannons and getting yelled at by Park Service, and there's nothing really here to do except, and we have families coming to town, and unfortunately, the only thing that they see to do for kids is ghost tours, which is another story in itself. I grew up with Arthur C. Clarke. I mean, literally, like every Friday night, World of Strange Powers. I love that stuff. Don't get me wrong. But there are 18 licenses for ghost tours in the town of Gettysburg. And that's a travesty. It really, truly is, because we hear them outside of the Rupp House building, and they're blatantly making up stuff. And it's so frustrating to us inside who are trying to actually honor these people who lived here by telling their true story, by being as honest as we possibly can. And we try to tell people that's entertainment. That's fine. That's totally fun to watch and listen to. Please don't take it, take it for that grain of salt that it is. But the idea here was we want kids to know history is fun. We want them to like understand that there are kids just like them that lived through this, and to find that connection that would actually bring them in to go, you know what? That kid's 9. Sadie Bushman was 9 when this was going on. And then we get so many kids that are like, hey, I'm 9. And we're like, yeah, do you think you could help out a wounded soldier, over at a field hospital? This kid was being a nerd at 9 years old, and she had to walk 2 miles with her 2-year-old brother tagging along behind her, just the two of them in the dark. Some of these things that these kids had to do you think you could do that? And they're just like, mm-mm. But we have them choose a child in the beginning. You have William Bailey, Sadie Bushman, Albertus McCreary, Mary Warren, who I love her picture the most at the end because she's got a lovely little cat on her lap. But anyways, I digress. Tilly Pierce, of course, and Lydia Ziegler. And so we get these kids to pick somebody that they kind of, can relate to, even if it's the awesome drawings that we have of them, because we have our own artwork actually done by an amazing artist named David Geister. Amazing guy. Oh, he's the best. So his work is perfect for like the Mary's holding a book, Tilly's holding a cup, different things. So it's kind of like these kids can look at them and be like, who do I want to be? And as they go through, they kind of connect with that kid as they go through the story. So we've had whole families just pick one of each so that they all get all of them, the whole story.
That's awesome, though. That's
Yeah.
fantastic. Yeah.
And as we go through the museum, like generally it's a go at your own pace thing. The families are kind of like, it's family led. We like to say it's kid led because the kids are like, and they're off doing their own thing. We'll jump in every once in a while and answer some questions if they have any, or if we notice they miss something, we'll kind of like creep on over and be like, did you know you can lift this up? Like lift up this pack. Really cool.
Wow. Kids just like us, except that their toasters were a lot different. That's probably the thing, right? So now, Jamie, you and I first met at the Civil War Roundtable Congress that had its conference up in Gettysburg last summer. And so you were there as a member of the Gettysburg Civil War Roundtable. You have an affiliation with them. Tell us a little bit about what's it like to be in a Civil War Roundtable in a Civil War town.
We're spoiler rotten. It's fantastic because in the summertime, we actually, in lieu of having our normal meetings inside, we'll go out in the battlefield. And so we'll do battlefield walks, which just, it's the bee's knees. Can't get better than that. I mean, it's literally here in our backyards. So I joined them. Well, I went for the full immersion experience of Gettysburg when I first moved here. I mean, I'm an active member of every organization here, the Seminary Ridge Museum membership, a Historical Society membership, American Battlefield Trust. And then of course I joined the Roundtable of Gettysburg as soon as I got here too, because I was like, oh, I can go to do that every once a month and get even more lectures. I love lectures. And then they said, hey, we need some board members. Do you want to jump on? And so I threw my hat in the ring for a nomination for that. And yeah, and now last summer I ended up taking on, I was offered the chance to actually produce the newsletter for them. So from beginning to end, Bruce Davis basically just kind of said, it's yours if you want it. Do whatever you want. Don't copy the last thing. Do whatever you want to do. So he gave me full artistic license to actually create what I've now named the Signal Station. Yeah, the newsletter for the Civil War Roundtable of Gettysburg. And it's been so interesting because I can actually, by being here, I mean, we have so many people that move here because they're fascinated with this place. People that just collect things. So we have people that have fantastic collections, have that collect fantastic stories. Just family stories. It's great. So what I try to do, and I've been trying to do, is get some collaboration with our members so that we can highlight them and like do like show and tells. They can show off something that they're really proud of in their collection and talk about it. Talk about family history that's here. But yeah, so that's one great thing about being in the roundtable that's here is the amount of people who are interested in it and that are. I think last I checked, we're almost up to 300 members because it's Gettysburg.
Because it's Gettysburg, yes. And so for podcast listeners, we'll actually have an interview with Michelle Hessler, who's vice president of the Roundtable, coming up as a part of this series later on. So if you're interested in what Jamie's talking about, we'll have the chance to delve into that a little bit more in depth. But for you, it must be like being a kid in a candy store then.
Oh my God, yeah. Totally, every day. Yep. And then the CWIs here, of course, too, the Civil War Institute.
Yep.
So I've made it a mission of mine to try to hit as many things as I can when that's going on as well. So,
not a
yeah.
bad goal. Not a bad goal at all.
Nope. Yeah. No. I think my husband's only complaint is we might need to actually start reinforcing the floors in the house because the amount of bookshelves that I've acquired. And I just say, you know, they're all reference, so I can't get rid of them, right?
That's right.
It's not
That's right.
Like
it's a research library. I'm using it. It's for work, you know. It's
that's right.
So, Jamie, before we wrap up, let me hit you with a couple lightning round questions, if that's okay.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
So, you're in Gettysburg. Favorite spot on the battlefield?
You know, I think my favorite spot is the Devil's Kitchen.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that one yet.
It's over by Devil's Den, but if you park and you go across that little bridge across Plum Run and you go up into the woods up towards Big Round Top, follow that trail up, there's another big mountain of rocks that's in there. And it's kind of, God knows how many thousands of even million years ago these big rocks split. You can actually walk down in between these two huge stones, and it gets colder and colder and colder as you get down. And there's like two tunnels kind of in there. It's really neat. So, I mean, geez, you think about the Alabamans and Texans that were in that side of the field and go, my God, these guys had their own fortress over here. It's just amazing. But it's one of my favorite little tidbits to show off to people when they come to visit me, and I'll be like, let me show you the real cool place in here. So, Devil's Kitchen.
Excellent. A favorite non-Gettysburg battlefield?
Man. Well, I guess it's adjacent. My other favorite favorite place would have been was Fort Macon. Been there twice.
All right.
Loved it. Both times that I was there, I mean, they let you go everywhere. And I'm sure it's because everything's open and everything's stone and but it was like there was like 3 inches of water in it the one time that I went, and I didn't care. I just walked everywhere through the place because I just wanted to see it all. And being able to actually climb up, and I'm a sucker for Star Fort. What can I say?
They're fascinating to explore. They're
yeah.
fascinating to explore.
Yeah.
So, favorite Civil War monument?
Actually, my favorite one is to Zabdiel Boylston Adams.
Okay.
That's another one I like to point out to people, because nobody ever thinks about it. It's kind of tucked in there behind the Michigan Monument. Everybody stops, pulls over on the loop, and looks at the beautiful Irish Wolfhound with the gorgeous cross, and it's beautiful. And then they keep driving. But if you just actually park and you look at the other side of the road and you look behind the Michigan Monument, there's a boulder there. And on that boulder is a plaque to this gentleman who was a surgeon. And he brought his, triage station way out there. Hid behind that boulder, basically, that was his protection. The guy has a fantastic story. I mean, he just works and works and works until he's blind. Literally, fatigue blindness takes him. I mean, they finally muster him out and they say, no, 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 you're good. You're good. You've done great. And he reenlists as infantry because they won't let him come back in as a doctor. And so he gets injured. He goes out. He reenlists in infantry. The gentleman survived the war, continues on, and on a family vacation visiting a dam, he falls off the dam. I mean, spoiler alert, sorry to tell you the ending, but my goodness, the lives that these people lead. It's amazing stories. It truly is.
That's a great off the beaten path spot, by the way. I really like that choice. So, favorite Civil War book?
Well, right now, it's Too Much for Human Endurance by Ron Kirkwood.
Okay.
But I'm spending a lot of time at the Spangler Farm. It's where my office is now. And I delight in that every day. I drive down that lane and just go, cannons are over there. The artillery was set up over there. And then we have, oh God, it's just oof, powerful place. So being able to read about it and keep going back, I keep going back to pages. So to find out,
Cool. All
what
right.
was this? Where was this gentleman? Yeah.
Cool. A final question is, you've got a fantastic story to get yourself where you're at. What advice would you offer a young person, a young man or a young woman, who's thinking, gosh, I think I want to do Civil War public history?
Yeah. Well, you're going to wear a lot of hats no matter what you do. Since I moved here, since I started working here, I very rarely said no. And that's a good thing at first. So, yes, do it all, do it all, do it all. And then get to where you can get to a point that you're like, oh my gosh, I have so much stuff going on. This is the best. But I'm going to stop at this right now and just learn everything. I mean, really, it's these opportunities that crop up when you've said yes enough times. Like they asked me at the roundtable, hey, do you mind going to the Civil War Congress? And I said, yes, please. And henceforth, I got to meet you there. And we're having this lovely conversation because of that.
I was going to
It's
say my
things,
condolences,
yeah.
actually. But
It's those things that that really kind of get you in the in places, putting that work forward and really thinking outside the box. Because I mean the Children's Museum, I mean we did so many things that were different and a lot of things that some people said, I don't think that's going to work. We tried it anyway, and you know what? Kids are walking out the door. And they don't think that we can hear them. And they're telling their parents, that was fun. And they're so excited about it. And I mean, they don't think they're not in earshot of us anymore, they think, but
well, and they'll
they're
let you know
leaving
if it
there.
wasn't fun too. They
Yeah.
won't.
Oh,
They
they will. But more often than not, they have a good time. So it's really for going into something like this, there is a career path here. You just gotta get in there, say yes, do some time, figure things out, join as many organizations as you can, and learn, enjoy the learn as along the way.
I love that advice. And of course, eventually we have to learn how to say no, but when you say yes, then you become the person that people ask, and that like makes you
Yeah.
indispensable, and that makes you super valuable, and it opens up opportunities, and you learn a lot of stuff. I love that advice. That's great advice. So, Jamie, I've had a great time chatting with you today. I appreciate you coming on the show with us.
Well, thank you. Likewise. This was
Yes.
fantastic.
Wonderful, wonderful. So I'm Chris Makowski for Jamie Umstead. Thanks so much for being with us here on the Emerging Civil War podcast. We'll see you online and on the battlefield. And before we wrap up, I got to say thanks to Civil War Trails, our sponsor. They've got more than 1,500 sites across six states. They're the world's largest open-air museum, and you can explore it at your leisure, finding some great hospitality along the way. Start planning your trip by downloading a brochure now at civilwartrails.org. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, please share, please like, please tell your friends, listen in on the conversations that we have here on the Emerging Civil War podcast. And of course, I want to say thanks to our engineer, Jackson Makowski, for piecing all this together. I want to say thanks to our producer, Edward Alexander. And I want to say thanks to the Second South Carolina String Band for the theme music they provide. You can still find those guys and their fantastic music. Just search for them on YouTube or on Facebook. Book, search for Second South Carolina String Band. And don't forget to join us online at emergingcivilwar.com. We've got more than 30 historians contributing free content every day. Lots of different writing styles, interests, backgrounds, and we're all trying to help you stay connected with America's defining event. So please join us at emergingcivilwar.com. Thanks for being with us here on the Emerging Civil War podcast. Thanks to Jamie Umstead for being with us. I'm Chris Makowski. We will see you online and on the battlefield.